to books now. With me in studio is Rick O'Shea, who has been looking at some of the latest publications in science fiction. Rick, I suppose when we think of science fiction books, certainly the names that spring to mind in the classic sense, Arthur C. Clarke, Douglas Adams. Has it become less niche or more niche in recent years, would you say?
Oh, no, I think it's become one of those things that's become far less niche. I think, you see, I suppose I've been reading sci-fi since I was, 10 or 11 years old. So you're talking about 30 years at this stage. And it's become out and in the mainstream. And particularly, I think that's because of huge new TV series that are all connected in some way to elements of fantasy or science fiction. And it's not just the Walking Deads of this world, but it's stuff like Under the Dome, the thing that was based on the Stephen King book last year. And that drags the literature, I think, out into the mainstream as well.
So do you have a defining set of traits for what makes a science fiction book in less than 30 seconds, if possible, please?
I don't. I read something today which was wonderful and I'd never read before by a guy called Mark Glassy. He said that science fiction is like pornography. You don't know what it is, but you know it when you see it. And I think that's absolutely spot on.
So you know science fiction when you see it. All right. Well, perhaps if we listen to what you've chosen, we'll know what you mean by science fiction. I guess that's the best way. And these are books that have sort of, they've come into the mainstream. They might have been on the edges, but they have made their way onto the big bookshelves and into the big book sales.
Yeah, these are all things that I saw in what you would call the mainstream bookshelves over the years. I do classify science fiction and fantasy that we're in the ghetto, and sometimes we're allowed out of the ghetto and we have our things turn up on the big shelves with the normal people. And that's what these are.
And these are pretty recent publications.
Over the last few months, yeah.
All right. The first book you've chosen then, Rick, is a debut novel, The Quick, from Lauren Owen, set in 19th century Yorkshire. What sort of world are we in here?
It is very much Gothic fiction. It falls within the world of, I thought about Dorian Gray while I was reading it. It's only about 100 pages in that you realise that the V word is involved. Vampires are part of this, although they don't like being called that in this book. It's set at the end of the 19th century. James and Charlotte are brother and sister. They live in an old ancestral pile in Yorkshire. James leaves for London. He meets up with a charismatic society gent, Christopher Page, who's a bit of the Dorian Grays about him in this story. And it starts as a kind of small love affair between the two of them. But then about 100 pages in, one of them gets killed. And I'm not revealing a huge amount by saying that, by a vampire. And then you realise, this is all the subtext for the world of the Aegeolius Club, who are a vampire cabal who are secretly running London, and then it ends up becoming a fully fledged war at the end of the book.
Right, and that's 100 pages in that it takes that shift. Is it a big book if it's 100 pages in and you're not giving anything away?
Yeah, it's about 500-600 pages in. It's a big chunky book, but it does rattle along, and she's great at writing character.
That's Lauren Owen's debut novel, The Quick, published by Jonathan Cape. Incidentally, you mentioned that it reminded you of Dorian Gray. Do you class it as science fiction?
I wouldn't dare do so. It's one of my favourite books ever. My wife's as well. She introduced me to it. No.
All right. Second book that you've chosen then within your category is The Girl with All the Gifts. The writer here is M.R. Carey. Who is he or she?
Yeah, Mike Carey is a guy who's been writing comic books for a long, long time. He started writing for 2000 AD, and he's one of those guys who these days writes everything from Batmans to X-Men to, he's an English guy, but he's a guy who's well steeped in that, and he started writing fiction a few years ago as well. This is the star, I think, of all of the books that I've looked at. This is the one that has made the crossover, and it's one of those ones that you're going to see being made into a really bad movie at some point over the next while, because they just won't get the subtleties of it.
And you mean crossover from the ghetto into the mainstream?
Absolutely. Yeah. I've seen this in every bookstore I've been in the last few months.
Is there a sort of a fun premise behind all of this?
A little. It's different. It's a zombie book, and immediately some people are going to go, the shutters will go down and that's it. They're not interested. But and it's hard to wring something out of the lemon, I suppose, that is zombie fiction. Everything's been done with it over the last few years, from 28 Days Later to Walking Dead to this is different, though. It's about Melanie. She's a 10-year-old girl. She lives in a building with girls like her. They all go to classes every day to see how smart they are. But it's on a British Army base. And at the end of the day, she's shackled, muzzled, and put back into a cell because she's a zombie.
She's a high-functioning zombie.
A high-functioning zombie.
Is that not an oxymoron?
No, in this particular post-apocalyptic scenario, there are very few of them, and they're treated as if they might be the cure for the plague that has infested humanity.
All right. Okay. So there's a clever premise behind it as well.
Very much so. And I'd say, but it's a character story. It's about Melanie. It's about her relationship with the doctor and the the teacher that she works with as well, and then the events that overtake all of them.
Just in the case of the first two books that we've spoken about, you mentioned there's a teenage or the vampire element in the first book that you spoke about, and here we have a 10-year-old girl at the very centre of, does that tell me anything about the demographic, the potential readership here? Are these quite definitely books that an adult can read without thinking, oh, I'm reading young adult fiction?
No, I definitely think they're not in the young adult part of the world. If you want young adult books, there are dozens of them out there that fall in these categories, but these definitely, I wouldn't know if I would necessarily put them in the hands of your average 12-year-old.
Right, so maybe making a note that you're saying that they're definitely for an adult readership. Let us move on to your third choice then, Rick. Sounds as if we're off to the Red Planet in Andy Weir's new book called The Martian. Is there a Martian at the heart of the story?
No, there's not. The Martian is Mark Watney. He's a NASA astronaut who ends up being left abandoned on the surface of Mars after his crewmates evacuate. There's an emergency. They think he's dead, and they evacuate from the surface of the planet. His communication array is destroyed, so no one knows he's alive. No one knows he's looking for him. And then he has to figure out what he's going to do with what he perceives to be the rest of a very short life.
And how short is that?
And that's it. No,
are you giving too much away if you tell me that?
I don't want to give too much away, but he immediately sets about, he's an engineer, so he immediately sets about the practicalities of what am I going to do to survive this week, the next week? How am I going to attempt to communicate with Earth? How am I going to grow some food for myself? I'll be honest with you, out of everything else here, this is the one that reminds me very much of Arthur C. Clarke, and I mean that in a great way. Mm. He was the first major science fiction author I ever read as a kid. It's quite technical. It does get a little bit wordy in the middle in terms of the technicalities of it, but he
actually... I was going to ask you, is the science a little believable?
Yeah, no, the science is 100% believable. For some people, that might be intimidating and it might put you off, but don't let it, because it's still a cracking good yarn as well.
It also strikes me as a little bit like, you know, the movie that Sam Rockwell was in, Moon.
Moon. There's a little of Moon about it, yeah, in that I imagine if and when this is filmed, and it will be because it's been optioned by 20th Century Fox, it's mostly a one-man story, apart from a few little bits and pieces. So it's going to be one of those ones, yeah.
It's quite definitely to a rags-to-riches story, because Andy Weir self-published this book originally, and then it was taken up by Del Rey Books, who are the publishers of this version, yeah?
Yeah, he originally self-published. No one was interested in it. He put it out there, sold it for 99 cents on Amazon, and when it went to the top of the Amazon charts, as tends to happen, people pay attention to it, and publishers paid attention to it. It got optioned by Fox, and next thing you know, it's on bookshelves.
Right, book number four, we're moving away from Martians or men on Mars, even into the world of insects. The Bees by Laylene Paul, is it? Who are the bees in question here? What is the world that we're living in?
It's such a wonderful premise for a book, and I knew nothing about it other than that that the entire cast of this book are bees. They live in a hive. There are humans in a very brief prologue and a very brief epilogue. And other than that, it is the story of one bee in particular. Her name is Flora 717, because all of the floras all just have numbers in order to differentiate themselves from each other. She's a worker bee. She's a sanitation bee.
But again, she is a worker bee.
She's a worker bee. She's the main character.
I thought there was only one female bee in a hive.
No, these are all workers. They take care of the sanitation, but she can speak. It makes her different from everyone else. So she gets noticed by the religious caste of bees, who are the ones who take care of the queen within the hive. And then throughout a series of stories, she ends up going through a lot of the different roles that are taken over by bees. Everything from the foragers, who are almost World War II flying aces, going out looking for pollen every day, to the male bees, who are almost, they play like Shakespearean fools in it. It's lovely. But it's a book it's about part North Korean regime, part religious nuts, part Shakespearean tomfoolery. It's part a wildlife text. It's part thriller. And all of the cast are bees. If you can buy into that, it is one of the best things I've read this year.
But yet Flora 717 is the only one who speaks.
She is the only one who speaks within the drones, within her own cast.
Oh, I beg your pardon. There are
others who speak elsewhere, but she's special because normally the ones who clean the floors don't. And that's what marks her out as special.
So is there a big allegory at play here?
Allegories of everything. Yeah, of everything that goes on, both in terms of repressive regimes and our attitudes towards religion and even our attitudes towards stealing things from nature. I mean, it's a beehive they live in. and the hive owner comes along and takes out a huge, you know, amount of honey at one point. And this is the most traumatic thing that's ever happened to all of them. Their food stores have been stolen. I felt like I'd never, you know, eat honey again without feeling guilty.
Okay. Lillian Paul, by the way, she's one of a few female writers. Are there many in the sci-fi world, or is that increasing now?
Oh, it's increasing hugely. Out of, I think, almost, I mean, two-thirds of the stuff I've read this year, and whether I'm just falling into it luckily or by female authors. Yeah, there's no, I don't think it's a male-dominated area, if it ever was at all.
All right. You've also been reading a book called The Three, again, a female writer, Sarah Lotz. This is supposedly a thriller, but you're calling it science fiction. So how have you managed to squeeze one genre into the other?
Under the wire. Only because the book is, it's officially a thriller. It tells a story of four plane crashes around the world on the same day. They happen within an hour of each other. They're in very different places, in Florida, in South Africa, Japan, and in the ocean. There are three survivors, and they're all children who are roughly the same age. So the story itself is told from inside the construct of, there is a book being written by a journalist. So some of it is told in the form of transcribed interviews. Some of it is told in the form of newspaper articles. Some of it is narrated by the journalist herself. Elspeth Martins is the journalist who's putting it together. But it starts getting on further and further into the book. Religion again plays a part in this. And in the last 100 pages or so, they start asking questions about, was the survival of these three children a coincidence? Is it a supernatural occurrence? Are they three horsemen of the apocalypse? And it ties itself up very beautifully at the end. Endings are hard to write in books like this, and I think she's nailed this one.
By the way, tell me a little bit more about Sarah Lotz. She's South African originally, yeah?
Yeah, she is. She's South African, and this isn't the first time that she's written. It's the first time she's written under her own name, but she's written a series of books before in horror, in young adult, even one or two erotica stories, all under other pseudonyms. This is either the fourth time she's written something successfully under four different names. You hate people like that.
Well, here's another woman who's using a pseudonym, Claire North.
Yes.
The book that she's writing this time is The First 15 Lives of Harry August. So who is Claire North? Is she several other people? Like
she is pretty much. And again, it seems to be something that's happening a lot these days. Her name is Catherine Webb. Her first book was written when she was 14 years old. She was writing kids' fiction. It was called Mirror Dreams. She's written young adult novels. Again, she's written fantasy novels, and now she's writing what is a serious adult novel under the title Claire North.
Right. The first 15 Lives of Harry August, or August perhaps, I'm not sure.
As far as I know. The opening two pages or whatever, such a great sell. He's on his deathbed, Harry. There's a little girl who comes to his deathbed. It's the end of his 11th life, and she says, I nearly missed you. I need to send a message. The world is ending. And then you realise you've ended up in a tiny little subgrouping of humanity that find that when they die, they don't die. That they arrive back where they were born the first time around, but they have all of the memories of their first life with them. And this continues to happen again and again and again. They're born in the same place, but they have the memories of each previous life that they go through. And it alters them as people. And then one of them decides that he's going to use that to his advantage. And it ends up unravelling all of human history.
All right, Rick, last time you were in with us, you were on your 100 books in 1 year scenario. How far into it are you now? We're at near the end of July?
Yeah, I just over in the canteen, I just finished number 54. So I'm not too bad. I'm about three or four behind. But, you know, summer holidays will start.
Holidays are coming up, so you'd have a bit of time there. All of the books that Rick has chosen for us this evening will go up on our website, which is rte.ie/radio1/arena. And you can also go to Rick's own website where you can read his reviews of the books, ricochet.ie.